It's Wednesday, which means it's another big news Wednesday with JR Jackson. JR, how's it going?
You know what? Can I be honest with you?
No.
Okay, I will.
A little bit. I can take a little bit of honesty today.
Only a little bit. It was going fine. And you know, you have to sign into your Google stuff to see everything. And every once in a while, Google just signs you out after like a month and says, here, sign in again. And it did it. It only does it literally as things are building up on the show. As the show starts. I mean, and not just this show. Main show, when I'm going into the meeting, anything I need it for, it automatically goes, hey, so by the way, sign back in, idiot. And screw up everything you're about to do. So that's how I'm doing.
Exactly. It's Big Disaster Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Everything's bigger, including Google's betrayal. But anyway, always glad to have you here, JR. Today is, in fact, actually a very big news Wednesday. If you consider the future of our country, the possibility of a civil war, big news, I guess. We also have a supersized big meanwhile in Wednesday. Not just with a lot of stories, not just with big stories, but with big animals, actually. So it's going to be a lot of fun. That is going to be closing out the show. So definitely stay tuned for that. Stick around for that. But before we get to that, we're going to have Jon Stewart. The reception to his new show seems to be quite mixed. I haven't gotten around to watching it yet, but he did do an interview recently where it made a really good point that Fox News decided to totally like blunder into proving without meaning to. And then of course, we're gonna get into a whole bunch about democracy, whether we ever had it, whether we will. It's gonna be a lot of fun, JR, I think.
So it's plenty of openings for my pessimism, yes?
Oh, there's gonna be some room for some pessimism, yeah. And we get to talk about an athlete. I found a sports story for you, so you should be very excited about that too. But anyway, along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you want to send us any questions, comments, tweets, super chats, all that, that would be wonderful. But I'm gonna import a tradition. So we do a pre-show every day. Do you know that? If you watch it on Twitch, you might not know that. But on YouTube, you can go at about 45 minutes before the show starts. We do a little pre-show where we talk about a whole bunch of other stories and we chit chat and all that. There's the most important story for each show. If we don't get to 1,000 likes, I just walk off set and I don't do it. That's my promise to you. So I'm gonna do the same thing here. If we don't hit 1,000 likes, I'm just gonna leave. So anyway, we're gonna see how that goes. Big walk off Wednesdays. But JR, with all that said, you ready to talk about some news?
I think so.
Okay, I think we should. Let's start off with this video.
Talk about cancel culture, never seem to shut the up about. Look. The internet has democratized criticism. What do we do for a living? We talk, we criticize, we postulate, we opine, we make jokes, and now other people are having their say. And that's not cancel culture, that's relentlessness.
Look, I when I saw that, I thought Jon Stewart makes a great point. And by that, I mean the same thing I always do is that he made a point that I've made. And so I really like it because it was mine and it's his too. But anyway, so basically what he's saying is a two-part thing, JR, and we could talk about both of these. So one is about what actual sort of philosophical merit there is to the idea of cancel culture, which the people who are worried about cancel culture, or at least want you to think they're worried about it, they are very set on you taking this seriously. It's the most important thing. And then the second thing is, they sure do focus on it a lot. It's not just that they think it exists or want you to think it exists. It is like foundational, core to what they're saying. This is true for some randos. It's definitely true for some in right-wing media, as we'll see in just a little bit. What do you think about what he had to say?
Cancel culture is a basis in humility and whether or not you're willing to learn or fix yourself, make yourself better, progress, learn about the world, be enlightened. All these things that in many cases, especially us as Americans, it's frowned upon. You know, we grew up thinking or being told, not thinking, but being told, hey, you know what? You're lowering yourself if you listen to someone else with a different point of view. You're not standing up for your core values if you change your mind. What were your core values and what were they based on? If your core values were based on something that someone else told you to believe that you maybe don't even necessarily believe anymore, or you don't even practice when it comes to things like, say, religion, because many people say, oh, I'm this Christian, and they act nothing like Christians, but they use that as an excuse to be horrible to other people and deny their existence and things like that. So yeah, it's what he's saying is it's an exercise in having to actually listen to someone else. Yeah. Having to actually pay attention to someone else's life and experiences, because it all doesn't just resonate just from you. You're not the center of the universe. You're not everyone thinks they're the center of the universe in one way or another. And they're like, oh, how dare that, just because I disparage someone and eliminate their existence, which then leads to actions where people do things like actually eliminate their existence or disparage them or in their participation in society. That's okay for you to do it. Mm-hmm. The anti-cancel culture people have been for cancel culture since the beginning of everyone mm-hmm. else's time. And now they're finally getting some pushback and they just can't take it.
Yeah, well, look, so I have a lot that I want to talk about on this, but I want to go to a super chat because I think it's actually a good question that was asked. So YTP Renewed says, how do you categorize the Dixie Chicks example? That's a great question. Because the Dixie Chicks, at least for a long time, found less mainstream acceptance because they spoke out against the war in Iraq. That is definitely true. So I want to be very clear. When I say that cancel culture doesn't exist or it's a myth, I don't mean that no one has ever lost an opportunity over what they say or advocate for or whatever. What I mean is the construct that's pushed every day by the right wing and other people who knowingly or unknowingly are doing the work of the right wing, that does not exist. I am not saying that nobody has ever had consequences levied against them. I will also point out that they were canceled to the extent that they were canceled by the right, by people who are pushing for a war. So let's be very clear about that. And the modern narrative of the cancel culture does not have one inch of room for right wing cancellation of people who aren't conservative. That is not a part of it by intention. It is designed in that way. And another one of the myths that I talk about a lot that I want to, I'd write a book, but it seems like a lot of work, is that nothing about this is new. The term is new, but nothing about what is actually being done is new. It is exactly the same conversation, the same social thing as the 90s conversation about political correctness, and for the exact same reasons. The reason I talk about it and want to focus on it is I want people to understand that they are being conned by those who talk about cancel culture. This construct has been created by rich people, powerful people who do not want to be criticized in any way. And I'm being very specific with my language there. They're not worried about being canceled because basically nobody ever has been. They're worried about something far less. They talk about cancellation to avoid criticism. They talk about their own free speech rights to stop you from using yours. Because as John Stewart points out, all of this is about people saying what they think, criticizing something they don't like. And they're told that they're against free speech when they do that. They're literally exercising their free speech rights. And on the contrary, the other people who are worried about cancel culture and are trying to stop the leftist censors are inherently telling people to not express themselves. Do not speak out about what you believe. Some people get to do that. The rich people, the elites, the wealthy, those who I'm defending, they will always have that right, and they do always have that right. After years of cancel culture, who did we get? Epstein? I think that's pretty much it. The rest of them are fine. And by the way, some people who I generally like talk about this, Dave Chappelle, I know this quote because The Hill tweeted it out 30 times. It was, if this is cancel culture, I love it. But that's kind of the point. It ain't actually cancel culture if it ain't that bad when you've been canceled. So anyway, there's a lot there, JR. I apologize. It's something I care a lot because the people who are pushing, like some randos, they legitimately believe it. They're wrong. They don't know that they're being conned, that they've been deputized into this culture war. But the people like Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson, all that, they know exactly what they're doing. They have a strategy. They're waging war. It's the same war as it's always been, but I want people to understand the battleground at the very least.
Yeah, as I point out, the cancel culture thing is not new, or at least someone getting blacklisted. Things like that happen in the time of industries, except they happen a lot of times people who were challenging the industry or the powerful people in charge. People, you bring up Dixie Chicks. That was like in 2003 or 2004.
Yeah.
Were we even using smartphones then? I don't even think so. That kind of started around 05, 06.
That was 06, I think.
Yeah. So the whole thing with apps where you have like Instagrams and Twitters and all that stuff, where people instantly respond to what you've said and done, which is now the atmosphere that we're in, that has given platforms to people who normally don't have platforms and regular people that can coalesce and criticize a powerful person. The powerful people are not used to being criticized. And now that they're being criticized, they can't take it. And I'm being canceled. The people in power have always had the biggest problems once they finally have to deal with the consequences of the things that they've done, that they indiscriminately have done to other folks throughout time.
Yeah.
You know, they can implement policies or influence politicians to do horrible things to people. And as soon as people ask for something else, or I'm sorry, demand for something else because of where they live and who they are and their place as Americans in this society, it's, oh my God, I can't believe you're coming for me.
Yep.
Coming for you. It's a threat to them for someone else to hold them accountable or do a small percentage of the things to them that they've always done to everyone else. They just can't take it. So now it's, we have to do something about this.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, like I know to some extent I'm gonna repeat myself, either from earlier or from other shows, but it is not that nothing happens. The Dixie Chicks did lose out on opportunities. You know, it was the right that did it. And sometimes maybe leftists or centrists or whatever do something that in theory causes someone to lose an opportunity. But what I'm saying is that that is not cancel culture, and cancel culture does not exist because whatever is happening often does not get filed under the bucket, the heading of cancel culture. No right winger says, you know, we really did go too far with the Dixie Chicks. We were doings of cancel culture. Mm-hmm. They don't do that. When Sean Hannity is pushing for a boycott of Keurig, that's not cancel culture. When Donald Trump is leading a nationwide campaign to primary and remove every Republican that's ever spoken out against him, that's not cancel culture. And that's not me saying that. They won't acknowledge that that's that. And that's why we have to destroy this construct. It isn't actually a problem. It isn't widespread like they talk about it. It has nothing to do with real people's problems. And it has been designed to only incorporate a critique of the left that is literally all it is, 100%. Which is why when you see leftists supporting the idea of it, it's even more distressing than the right, because we should know better. We should know how this has always been deployed against the left. And I, just as a general rule, if it's so bad to do this stuff, if it's cancellation to criticize Dave Chappelle or Joe Rogan or whoever, I want you to try to put yourself, and I apologize for this, in the place, in the shoes of a Ben Shapiro. And imagine, hypothetically, someone you disagree with says or does something you don't like. What does Ben Shapiro do? Does he shut up about it? Does he keep it to himself because he wouldn't want to do a cancel culture? No, you know that. Ben Shapiro criticizes them. He says stuff. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, Donald Trump, all the Republicans, they go hard against the things they disagree with. And we get to do the exact same thing.
Yep, they're not used to that power dynamic. And they're like, wait a second, I'm supposed to be in power here. That's what it comes down to.
Exactly. And by the way, this is way less important, but the other part of his critique was that they focus so much on it. Let's talk briefly about why that is. But first, as I alluded to, Fox News is really gonna prove the point. They saw that video too, and here's how they introed their segment about it.
Head former Daily Show host Jon Stewart says cancel culture isn't real. It's just a myth. No one's being canceled. Really? We've got so much to say on this. Stay with us.
Yeah, you do. I'm sure you do. You do every day, and they in fact did. They went on to talk about it, and host Harris Faulkner said, "I know some of this is performative because if you want people to click on you, just talk about cancel culture." She was not talking about them. She was talking about him. She said he critiqued the attacks on cancel culture to be performative, to get people to click, as they launched into an expansive conversation about it again.
It was literally a teaser. It was literally a teaser. Yeah. Said, hey, you guys, hang on, watch all these ads from our sponsors. When we come back,
keep watching.
Stay here and keep watching, because we're going to do something that's going to make you really want to watch this. Invite your friends.
Yeah. And by the way, it isn't just, so it's two things. One, it's the thing I was talking about the anti-vax content earlier this week. They need to talk about something that gets clicks, right? Because views are down, people aren't as excited about politics. So cancel culture gets people really worked up. It's that, but it's also every minute you spend talking about it, what are you not talking about? Yeah. Actual problems that actually do affect people. We have this war, it takes up people's time. That's why I'm fighting against it. But Fox News, they would say they care about the economic standing of right wingers, and yet they have never actually talked about those things. And they certainly don't want people to focus on those things. They don't want people to elect politicians based on those things. And so instead, you make it vague. You make it about the Dave Chappelle's and the Joe Rogan's and all that. You get people focused on vague attacks. My rights are being taken away. What rights? Are you gonna lose like a show that you're doing at Madison Square Garden? No, that doesn't actually affect you. But they make them think that it does. And so it not only legitimizes their cultural critiques while demonizing, while banishing left-wing cultural critiques, it also gets their viewers to focus on stuff that has nothing to do with actually improving their lives. And so when you see all these right wingers having no problem with politicians like Donald Trump and Marjorie Greene, people that don't do anything to improve their standing in life, and you wonder why don't they expect more? This is why they don't expect more. All they expect is someone who's gonna fight back against this mythological attack on their free speech rights that never actually comes. This is how it functions day by day, and you're seated on Fox News.
John, have you written a book on this yet? Because I'm sorry, bro. It's nobody saying it this way. At least people that I've heard.
I'm sure John Stewart says it this way, and people a lot smarter and more articulate than me. I'm kind of inclined to do the book just so that I could try to get it out before Cenk's book comes out. That would be fun. Anyway, we'll see. Any other thoughts about this, though?
No. I'm you know.
Okay. Well, we'll have more to say. Stay tuned after this. But anyway, no, we actually won't on this. We have other stuff that we have to talk about. We are gonna take our first break. We come back. Is it time for the US to go through a divorce? And who signed the prenup and why? After this. Okay, everybody, wanted to let you know a few things that are coming up. So there are two important guests appearing on the Young Turks later. So as the appetizer on the first hour, Anna Kasparian is gonna be joined by, I swear to God, Representative Ilhan Omar. How exciting is that?
Wow.
That the GOAT, like driver of the Mecca Ilhan herself, Ilhan Omar. That is at 6 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Pacific time. And then even more importantly, in the second hour, Anna will be joined by John Iadarola, not a representative, and nobody cares. But I'll be there, so join me for the second hour anyway.
He is writing a book whining about cancel culture though.
Mm-hmm, exactly. No, I love the Ilhan Omar song. I don't know that she's done a TYT show before, which is like kind of crazy and a damn shame. But anyway, she's on, so that's good. That's good. Big fan. Anyway, with that, you want to talk about some nonsense?
Oh, I'm always ready.
Let's get into some. Look, it's only the opening, the front door is nonsense. The house is a horror show. So get ready to laugh, JR. Okay. Marjorie Greene is apparently ready for a divorce. Not a personal thing. Who knows if that'll come, but for the whole country. Should America have a national divorce? That is what she polled her following on Twitter. And imagine if you could get her Twitter following in a room together. Damn, I wouldn't want to be in that room. But here's what they had to say. And honestly, they weren't necessarily as supportive of it as I might have expected. 43% said yes by Republican and D states. How exactly do you break that down? Is it like by presidential vote, and then we're gonna have to have an audit of Georgia? It would be a mess, but that's what they say. 47.5% said no, stay together, and 9.5% were undecided. By the way, in the future for Twitter polls, don't say that you're undecided. It's just a Twitter poll. Pull the trigger, man. Just come on, click on something. Seriously, it ain't that important.
I kind of don't understand any undecided. It's like if there's a poll that I'm undecided on, I just kind of don't say anything.
You just don't answer. Like, it's Twitter. Come on. Anyway, it's not going on your permanent record. But anyway, less than half said yes, we should split apart. But it's apparently something that she's been thinking about. She retweeted this other crazy person who had this map with national divorce is expensive, but it's worth every penny. Sure, look, we've shown you the numbers on which states give more than they get from the federal government and vice versa. We'll see how expensive it ends up being for you in the end. But JR, this is something that she is sort of, at least sort of implicitly encouraging since she's asking about it. But what do you think about the response? What do you think about the national divorce?
Yeah, it's we mentioned a little bit Monday, I think, on the main show. How again? You kind of touched on this. How does that work? You know, let's talk just with the California recall stuff we saw. We saw how the northern parts in northeast parts of the state and all the way to the top, and even say like little counties here and there were all very much into the recall. And then the vast majority of the rest of the state, more populated areas, were not. So like California's this blue state, everyone says, if you don't live here. There's plenty of red areas in California, there's plenty. So what happens when California is on the blue state side and all those conservatives here are like, oh yeah, suddenly we believe in what those libs are believing in. It doesn't make much sense. And how does the division happen? How does the support for it happen? Who is fighting this whole separation and civil war and divorce that they keep talking about? It's all more of the same stuff, like you were pointing out earlier. If it doesn't really have anything to do with actually affecting your life or actually changing whatever predicament and situation you're in that your government should be a part of because you pay into it, then it's just a distraction. How does this really work? So we got people thinking about, how do we have a national divorce? Well, in the meantime, they're last night they were thinking, how do I take care of this cyst on my neck that I don't really want to go to the doctor for because they're going to charge me up the ass for it and I have no idea what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You discard that to talk about the national divorce because you're mad at Joe Biden about something.
Yeah. Well, look, I agree. Look, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So yes, on some level, it definitely is a waste of time. But it's something that not just Marjorie Greene is thinking about. A poll conducted by the University of Virginia shows that 4 in 10 Biden supporters and 52% of Trump voters at least somewhat agree that it's time to split the country, favoring blue-red states seceding from the union. Well, what else would it be? But by the way, if we do ever set that up, I think it should be set up based upon the sort of base level understanding that I have now of how football works in the UK based on watching Ted Lasso. We should split by blue and red, but every year there should be the chance for one of the red states to be promoted to blue if they get their act together.
John, okay,
I think that would be a good incentive for them.
Spoilers, I just started the show, bro.
That's just not started a spoiler. The show. Anyway, I want to make maybe a dumb point. I don't know, maybe a weird point. It's the reason I wanted to talk about this. And by the way, I'm going to say that I don't understand something. I do understand cynically how politicians use this. But once again, I want to talk about uneven battles. So we have right wingers who are mad at left wingers or conservatives who are mad at Dems and think that they're ruining the country. And on the other side, you have Dems who think that right wingers are ruining the country. So if I were to list like the 10 things that I think, I would probably put it more just corporatist because Dems are doing it too, but that these people are doing that are severely hurting the country, it would be stuff like, you know, the student debt bubble, not dealing with climate change, making healthcare impossible to achieve, not having paid family leave, not being able to afford an education in the first place, things like that. What is their actual problem with like? I don't worship your God, that's true. And I'm pretty okay with like a refugee from El Salvador moving into the neighborhood. That's not as bad, I don't think. Like, I know that that probably makes me seem stupid and shallow, that I don't think that their concerns are as legitimate. But I really do think that it's vague, stupid BS. It's the war on Christmas, it's cancel culture. These are not, for the most part, they're not serious concerns. And it doesn't mean that those conservatives don't have serious concerns. those serious concerns that conservatives have just have nothing to do with what politicians like Marjorie Greene talk about and try to do in office. And so if we were to split, I sort of get why some, you know, some libs might want to split off. They want to finally make good on these crises. But the other side, it's like, you want to be free to, like, I don't know, stop your wife from working, like ban interracial marriage. That sucks, man. It really sucks.
Yeah, it's based in this very primal superiority thing. All this is based in superiority and levels of society that for some reason, even folks that in many of these, you know, conservative areas are in the bottom of are promoting. Yeah. They fooled them into thinking that, hey, if you separate in these, okay, Texas, Alabama, whatever, separates into this conservative part of this country, this separate country called Jefferson or something, right? And then after they separate, are there no more like societal differences? Are there no more poor people? Are there no more people at the top stealing money from you? Are there no more people that are just running through the system, taking everything and then not allowing you to have any access to it? Do taxes not exist anymore? How does it work? How does the pay for work? Because the rich folks don't have to pay anything and the poor people have to pay everything and not get anything back, because that's what you're supporting. That's the basis for many of these economic policies for these conservative groups anyway, and conservative politicians, because they're answering to their lords, which are corporations and rich people. How does it work for you at the end once you've separated? Everybody's kings there? Because by the way, if everybody's doing great and everybody's getting all this extra stuff, that sounds like that whole socialist agenda where everybody has something and a part of the country. What do you want? What is it you want?
The thing that bothers me about what you're saying is you didn't say this, to be fair, but you implied that Marjorie Greene hasn't thought this through all the way. And I don't like that. I don't appreciate that. Anyway, now here's the thing. I want to jump into a slightly different angle on this, and it is the people who are ready for this. And not, when I say ready, I don't mean that they're voting in polls online. I mean something else. Let's jump into this next story. There's a new thing going around. You might have seen it on TikTok. You might have seen it on Reddit. You might have seen it on your own street, depending on where in America you live. It's all black American flags. Now, if you don't know anything about this, don't get your hopes up. This has nothing to do with supporting Black Lives Matter in America or anything like that. It's something else. Trump supporters have begun to fly them in an implicit threat to harm or kill their opponents, meaning non-white people, socialist liberals, Muslims, vaccinated people, and others deemed to be enemies of real America. We're gonna explain why that is. So don't just trust me or whatever. But like, I just looked around on, I live in LA, so thankfully I haven't seen one of these. I've seen a few crazy flags, thin blue line, stuff like that. I haven't seen this yet. Let's show a picture. This is outside a Denny's, you know, when you're ready for the revolution and a moon over my hammy at the same time. You could see one just outside of like a little house, just a little black flag, black American flag. It's fun. So what is this? Well, apparently, although some say that it actually predates the American Civil War, all the sources I saw said that one of the first times a fully blacked out American flag entered the American consciousness was during the American Civil War of 1861 to 1865. During that period, particular Confederate Army units flew the black flag to symbolize the opposite of the white flag of surrender. It means they would neither give nor accept quarter. In other words, no quarter will be given means enemy combatants would rather be killed then taken prisoner. That means there will not be any prisoners. There will not be any mercy. We believe in our cause so much that we will die for it and we will kill for it. That's it.
And sounds very American, picked John.
Up once again.
Sounds well, pretty patriotic.
Confederate American, at least, yes.
Yeah, these self-proclaimed patriots love anti-American flags, don't they? The black and dot American flag, the Confederate flag, their stupid ass don't tread on me flags. They got a lot of Trump flags. They got a lot of flags that aren't American flags, but they sure talk about how much they love that American flag. You know, you better not burn one. Don't burn one, but make it black. So replace it with the Confederate one, replace it with the Trump one. Put it on your dress, put it on your swim trunks, put on your bikini, all those things that, you know, that are not patriotic, that you claim to be patriotic for, you use that for this degree. So everybody who wants to talk about how, you know, we got to separate and oh my God, this country's going this way and I'm ready for the fight, the civil war, ask them just straight up, are you willing to die? Would you die right now for Donald Trump? Are you willing to die for Donald Trump? Because that's what they're pushing you towards. Because this approach of, oh man, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna fight this war and I'm gonna kill. Do you think there's no casualties in this war that you're preparing for? Do you think that your AR-15 in your backyard is gonna take out the whole rest of those libs out there? Because you know, libs don't have guns. It's constant. This constant belief that they're being fooled into thinking that they're these badasses that are really gonna take over the country. Ask them straight up, because there's those old school wars where people went into war because they were desperate and had nothing else in life and they're looking for some kind of legacy or something to push on, or their name being something, and they're willing to go die. Are you willing to go die? Are you willing to go die? Because we're getting closer and closer to those, to what we were afraid of, is these Muslim terror groups where they're willing to die for their cause and their leader. Are you willing to be just like what you said you hated and you're afraid of?
Yeah.
Just be, answer the question, fear. Yes or no. You want to die right now. If you die, Donald Trump gets back in office. You gonna die?
I think that there are some, and there are way more who want someone else to be that person at least. That's why they're not glorifying Ashley Babbitt, because they just think the name rolls off the tongue. They're glorifying the person who will die to keep Donald Trump in office.
And they're willing to die. Now, they are willing eventually, as she was, to die for the cause. But if you ask her before that day, are you gonna die today for this guy? She'd say no.
Yeah.
But she did.
I don't know. Like, it's you made a great point, by the way, about the flags. Like, if a dude was like, man, Chevys are the best, I love Chevys, and then you look in his driveway and it's just like a bunch of Fords, there's a Mazda, like, you'd be like, do you really love that thing that you say that you love? Because you don't act like it. You act like you like options.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so look, I looked on Reddit. I just searched for Black American flag. And what it mostly was lots of people saying, hey, so I saw this Black American flag on my street, or my dad just put up a Black American flag. It was lots of people very curious about what the hell was going on. And this is what it is. And by the way, look, some will just think that it looks cool or whatever. That's true. And you're probably gonna hear, maybe it's already happened. If not, it's gonna happen. Look at these libs. They got trolled. We didn't actually put it up because we want to kill people. We just wanted them to think that we wanted to. And I will say what I always say. Okay, that's fine, but it doesn't really mean what you think it means. If you think it's funny to pretend you want to kill your political opponents, maybe you don't want to kill your political opponents. But I wouldn't put you under the category of someone who definitely doesn't. Like, you're at least in the middle, okay? So I think it's important that people know what this is, regardless of whether any individual dude at Denny's plans on killing a congressperson. Anyway, I wanna go to something slightly different. I'm gonna reset for this. The authors of a book called How Democracies Die, Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt, they were on CNN talking about some of what they've seen that looks like it might be leading into increased political violence and possibly more coup attempts. So I want to show you a little bit of that interview. Let's jump into that.
When we wrote How Democracies Die 4 years ago, we were worried about the Republican Party because they allowed Donald Trump to be elected. They sort of dropped the ball and failed to protect our democracy from an authoritarian demagogue. But we did not expect that the entire Republican Party would evolve into an anti-democratic force. And that's where they are today. The entire Republican Party leadership, with a small handful of exceptions, is now no longer willing to accept electoral defeat. And the democracy can't survive, cannot survive, if one major party can't accept defeat, can't lose.
And look, that point that they made, that it's really about the fact that so many in the Republican Party have supported the claims of the big lie, have refused to admit what January 6th was. So few did. That is like the scariest part. It's not that there are millions of Americans willing to potentially kill someone for Trump, although very worried about that. that isn't necessarily enough to overthrow democracy based on the historical analysis they've shown of democracies that have failed and those which have survived. It's when the party goes along with it. And that is very much what we've seen. And it didn't necessarily have to go that way. I will point out, as I have many times, in the initial hours of January 6th, even up to a couple days later, there were a lot of Republican elected officials who were trying to distance themselves, criticizing Donald Trump openly. And then they learned their lesson and they realized, oh, that wasn't a line that we're not supposed to cross. The base is gonna stick with him. They're not horrified by this. Well, all aboard the coup train, because I don't want to be kicked out of the party. And so, JR, that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, it's when your party is full of people who have zero principles, they'll float whatever direction that they're blown in. That's just how it is. And they're willing to follow a guy who, no matter how many discouraging facts come in his face, he pushes right through. And like, well, I guess we'll stop pushing. You know, I think Chuck Grassley is the latest. After he had his event in Iowa, Chuck Grassley was criticizing him since before January 6th, but then specifically after January 6th. And now, oh, he's in Iowa? I gotta jump on that train because now I'm running for office. There was articles where other elected officials, other Republicans said, well, Chuck Grassley, he announced that he's running for re-election. So of course now he is switching what he's saying. Mm-hmm. Not realizing that's an open admission that as long as you're running for office, your principles don't mean anything. He had principles for a while. Now he's running for re-election. So therefore those principles have been completely flipped on their heads. Were they principles or was he just lying?
Yeah. No, there's the principle is I want to stay in power. So whatever comes. And it continues. People are talking about like all of these steps are like you might take note of some, you might ignore others, but they are a part of what potentially in a future years could be a gigantic problem. And that slow motion coup is what they address in this next video.
Interesting is that there have been other events like this in other countries. France in 1934, there was an attack on the parliament. The police fought the right wing radicals off in that case. But 6 years later, democracy died in France. And part of it was there was an investigation. There was a committee that investigated that attack and it was highly politicized. They never really fully came to terms with it. And this was a harbinger of things to come. Spain in 1981, there was an attempted coup where soldiers came into the parliament as they were counting votes. When transitions of power are always dangerous times. And at that moment, the establishment politicians, the king of Spain stood up and said this was unacceptable. And Spanish democracy survived. So how mainstream politicians and establishment figures respond to events like this determine our fate. And right now, looking where we are compared to other countries, it's not looking very.
Yeah, I mean, nobody, like maybe a week after we wouldn't know after the 6th, but now nobody can deny that the lesson that has been learned on the right is that that was not a bad thing that happened. They might not want to go on record and say, I encouraged people to go because of the immediate like legal implications of that, maybe. But they want to reassure everyone that they support that, that those are great people, good people, political prisoners. They've been persecuted, all of that. And that should really worry you based on the examples that they're giving.
Yeah, and you know what? And we have to see the reality though. Because after that, I think Anderson Cooper then said, you know, that's terrifying. Can't believe this. Margaret Brennan on Face the Nation on Sunday, she was talking about the reality of the plans for a potential takeover, or at least trying to subvert democracy to a degree where we at least get your one guy in power again. And she's, oh my God, when I read that, because I think it was General Milley even said it. She said, oh my God. I was like, really? Yes. And this is where the power they have in this is continuing to make people believe that they are not really trying to do something this drastic because it hasn't happened before. It only takes one time for it to happen. How many times have a bunch of Trumpers run up into the US Capitol, broke through windows and said they're gonna kill politicians? It didn't happen before January 6th, but it happened on January 6th. So if you said it was gonna happen before January 6th, which some people did, and then we did nothing about it, it happens. So the next step, if we continue to go, hey, you know, I'm worried about transgender bathrooms, I'm worried about making sure Dave Chappelle is protected and all this, you're not thinking about what's actually happening, the reality of actions that are happening behind all the distractions about how you're so aggrieved over these things that mean nothing. They have actual plans in place to make sure that they are never out of power, because now there's enough people that are waking up to the way that they've stayed in power. Now they need to go to the next stage.
Yeah. And think about the politicians who are going to run and win in 2022. Think about who, when we hit 2024, there are going to be tons of names that you'll have been hearing about for a year and a half. Like, we're going to read this graphic from Madison Cawthorn. Madison Cawthorn is going to sound like Mitch McConnell compared to the people that are going to get elected and that you're going to have to deal with. And they are the players that are going to be influencing whether democracy gets to do an election in 2024. Okay, we had a lot more, but unfortunately we are running out of time. So we're going to take our second break. Before that, I do want to remind you, we got the poll going, tyt.com/polls, where you can go and vote on our leaf blower male Karen who stepped into a fight he was not prepared for. So we're going to have the results of that coming up soon. But for now, short break, we'll be back after this. Okay, I just saw a note from my team. We're going to be moving on to D block. Everyone says that we skip it, but today we're going to actually do it. So let's jump into this. Throughout the pandemic, there has been a lot of damage done. And here on this show, we've cataloged a lot of it. I want to add one more thing to it. We talked recently about kids getting COVID, how many have been affected by it, those that have died, those that are going to experience long COVID. There's another sort of experience that kids are going to be having coming out of this pandemic. Assuming it ended today and no one else needlessly died, we didn't have another wave, you would still have more than 140,000 children that have lost a parent or caretaker as a result of it. Literally tens of thousands of additional orphans who thankfully survived, but have lost a parent, the person taking care of them, which is just devastating when you think about the long-term effect that that has on that individual, on the family, just devastating. And this is, by the way, from April 1st to June 30th. So let me amend what I said earlier. If it had ended the 30th, because a lot of people have died since the 30th. That includes, by the way, custodial grandparents, grandparent caregivers, those sorts of things. It's about one out of every 500 children have now experienced orphanhood related to COVID-19. So you can add this to the list of things that you're not supposed to have a problem with. The most important thing is your rights to get sick and get other people sick. And if you have to produce a whole bunch of orphans, that's just how the cookie crumbles, I guess, JR.
And then what? And then what after this?
And then nothing. Kids? Screw them. They don't care. These pro-lifers don't care.
Because then once these whatever aged kids, it ranges, I'm sure, end up in the system maybe sometimes or in abusive situations, and their lives are upended. And then they maybe look for their country to have something to do with helping them out because they're minors. They probably get a big old FU to their face. That's just what happens. And how dare you try to suction off the system, go get a job, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But in the meantime, everything we could have done to prevent maybe as many of these deaths as possible, to keep the family unit together, because that's the basis for America. Keep that family unit together that suddenly we don't care about. When someone dies, the person that you have, that's your family unit. Oh, whatever. Bootstraps.
Yep.
Maybe because bootstraps. They never cared about the family union. Maybe because they only cared about certain people's family units and others. And they use the breakup of other people's family units to be another hammer and bludgeon on top of your head to tell you how much of a piece of garbage you actually are. This is how the system continually works. This is how the cycle works. And then we go, I have no idea why they're complaining. It's not like they didn't have any opportunity in this country. There's plenty of lack of opportunity from these folks. Yeah. And then again, you preventing this from happening will help them. But we don't care about helping them. We care about getting reelected and getting some level of political power. That's all the people that have decided to let this just happen this way care about.
Well, JR, there is actually some opportunity here. Now, 140,000 children have been given the opportunity to experience a substantially harder life, at least statistically. So let's talk about this. Apparently, losing a parent has been shown to increase a child's risk of sexual abuse, mental health problems, housing instability, and poverty. I mean, when it's literally a caregiver, we understand why those, it's obviously not everybody, but why statistically it has that effect to a big community, 140,000 people. I grew up in Bridgeport, Connecticut. my vague memory is that Bridgeport, Connecticut had about 160,000 people. The idea that almost the entire population of the city I grew up in became orphans as a result of this is just insane. We should also point out that, as we know, the distribution of these deaths has not been even. Most recently, we've been focused on the fact that conservatives and people in conservative states are more likely to die. So that's true. But we also know that racially, especially early on, black and brown individuals were far more likely to get COVID and thus early on to die from COVID. The poor individuals as well. So you're gonna see that too. So this is gonna interact with a lot of other inequities produced by the pandemic that we've already identified. So it's gonna be just even worse.
Yeah, it's and so those lists of things that happen more to children that end up in these situations: sexual abuse, mental health problems, housing instability, and poverty. Think about the programs that are put in place to probably help folks in these situations, and how certain folks and certain political officials in this country want to cut those and have been cutting those, or haven't been funding them to a certain extent. Look at the fight that's happening over this human infrastructure bill with the reconciliation battle back and forth. That's why specifically, if you ask them, which parts of this bill would you like to cut out? Because they may help kids with poverty and families in poverty, housing instabilities, and we complain about homelessness all the time. That's one of the reasons people are fighting with even locally in LA and also with the state. Oh, we have a homeless problem in the state. Why?
Yeah.
Why do we have a homeless problem in the state? What are the many reasons we have a homeless problem in the state? Are you willing to do something about it before there's more homeless people on the streets? No, they're not.
Yeah.
They're just not.
Oh God. Look, if that wasn't bad enough, we have one more quick story, another thing that should matter, that's not gonna have any effect, but let's talk about it. It's been clear in many stories that we've done here on TDR that cops can be very afraid of certain sorts of things, and they have used that fear to act out with violence, in many cases with murder. When they're scared, as they've been trained to be, they will do crazy things. And yet, not scared of the right things doesn't seem, because new numbers show more than 460 cops have died from COVID-19 cases tied to their work since the beginning of the pandemic. Not totally independent stuff, like specifically tied to their work. In 2021 and 2020 and 2021, more than four times as many police officers have died from coronavirus than from gunfire. In the same period, COVID-19 was the most common cause of duty related deaths. And we know how scared they are of being shot, what they'll do when they're scared of being shot. They're not scared of COVID, seemingly, even though it's far more likely to kill them. And why do I say that? Well, we have seen time and time again that when you have vaccine mandates, encouragement to get vaccinated in government offices, there ain't no community like the cops for being opposed to it. We're seeing, let's see, in San Jose, California, city leaders decided that as a vaccine mandate was taking effect, they'll allow unvaccinated officers to remain employed because apparently they're not complying with it. You have cops going to these town council meetings and complain about it, saying that it's a violation of their rights and they shouldn't have to do it. Where's that fear, that natural like self-preservation that we see when they pull someone over for a traffic stop, JR?
Yeah, they don't have it. The thing is, now they're used to having this wide-ranging free motion of not having to follow any rules or orders. It's the qualified immunity line they like to push. They're used to getting away with anything. So why would they have any feelings of constraints being put upon them while they're doing their job? They have free rein. This is what we've conditioned them to believe. This is the monster that we've now created. And the LA, the LA County Sheriff Chief, Alex Villanueva, was like, I can't lose any more people because of budgetary constraints. And now, if I have them do these vaccine mandates, I'm gonna lose more people because they're gonna leave. Time for a hiring spree for people who are willing to do the job is all that means. That's their choice.
Can you imagine if BLM protesters had killed 460 cops? Or if guys that got like pulled over for speeding killed 460 cops? Cops would be walking around with bazookas in full Iron Man suits of armor. But when it's COVID, they have been trained not to care about it.
Or tell
They've
them
been trained by Tucker Carlson, Fox News.
Like there's an experimental shot that'll allow you to not be killed by these BLM protesters. They'll take it immediately.
Oh my God, they'd be pincushioned like a porcupine with that. But for this, they don't care. They don't care. And it's terrible. Needless deaths. These are actual tragedies, and they're allowed. Well, unfortunately, that is all the time we have for our first hour. So if you've been watching on our linear platforms, thank you so much for watching. Really do appreciate your support. If you're watching on the members app, Twitch or YouTube, we have a lot more to get to, including Kyrie Irving, who is expressing himself and meanwhile in all that and more coming up right after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.